This is The Agenda. Local newsmakers, community leaders, and people in our valley making a difference. Here's your host, Dave Bernstein.
Okay, we're going to get right to it. And State Senator Brad Hawkins joining us. We only get him for about 25 minutes here today, so we'll go quickly to the phone lines. And I understand Senator Hawkins, Senate Democrats have their supplemental budget proposal out. And it would add nearly $6 billion in new spending. And so wanted to get your reaction to that right off the bat. No tax relief in there, as I understand.
No, unfortunately, no tax relief, but also a lot of additional spending. And normally, the supplemental budget year, which we're in this legislative session, is supposed to be one of those budget years when we just make modest adjustments to the existing budgets. But I think my Democratic colleagues, at least in the Senate, have decided to make significantly more spending increases in their budget proposal. Also, I've heard the House Democratic proposal, which is either going to be unveiled shortly or is going to pass the House at some point soon, actually spends more than the Senate Democrat proposal. So this is at a time when, you know, if the Senate and House Democrats don't want to do tax relief, I can understand why maybe they wouldn't, even though it's much needed. But at a minimum, we should be saving a lot of the extra money into our ending fund balance and putting more funds into our budget stabilization account so that in future years, if we have an economic downturn, our state would be in a better position to absorb that downturn than we would be if we pass either of these budgets, spend to the max, and then don't have sufficient reserves to cover a dip in revenues in future years.
Now, I understood that we are looking at record budget surpluses to the tune of about $15 billion.
Well, it's record revenues, although whether that will actually yield record budget surpluses, I don't know. Because a budget, of course, is just an estimate of your revenues and your expenditures. And if your expenditures keep tracking upwards to track with your revenues that are also increasing upwards, you don't end up with a surplus. So I understand your question. I say that because I make a point of, yeah, you know, we shouldn't be spending everything all the time. Our state is still very sales tax dependent. And when there is a dip in the economy, fortunately, COVID hasn't really created that dip in terms of revenues to the state. But if there is, given the inflationary factors nationwide and some of these other things, and if history is any indication, there will be an economic downturn at some point. What happens when the state spends to the max? Well, what happens is we have to cut the budget significantly in order to make up the difference or raise taxes more to create more revenues when the economy is down. So I'm not too eager about what the proposals I'm seeing, at least just in the last couple hours, but they were just recently unveiled and I'm trying to, you know, process through them as I'm going through committees and testifying on my own bills and meeting with my colleagues and all the furious activities that we do as legislators each day. So, but this is the time in the session when these budgets start to get released. We have three budgets in the state, the operating, the transportation, and the capital budgets. And in the end, between now and March 10th, the House and the Senate and the governor's office all need to agree on one budget for each operating, transportation, and capital expenditures. So we still have a lot of work still left to do.
Now, I understand the Senate Democratic supplemental budget proposal. There's money for paid family leave, improving the state government computer system, and also even trying to improve schools' ability to withstand earthquakes. But about $6 billion of it is going into the Move Ahead Washington Transportation Package. And when we talk about that transportation package, I know we're still hoping to see some funding for the Confluence Parkway project. I guess in the first round of the negotiations on this, the Confluence Parkway project was not included. Is there still a chance we could see the $85 million that's being requested there come through?
Yes, I do believe there's still a chance, although it's been a little bit disappointing as to how this proposal has developed. And of course, the Democratic House and Senate transportation leaders have nicknamed this proposal the Move Ahead Washington Plan. But I'll tell you what, Dave, it's moving ahead like rapid transit at this point. I mean, it was introduced, I think, on earlier this month, like February 9th or something like that. It had a hearing before the Senate Transportation Committee that I serve on. A couple days later, it passed the committee the next day, and then it came to the Senate floor the day after that. And so it's now in the House Transportation Committee. Basically, a lot of the Democratic priorities, the mega projects in Western Washington and some in Spokane, are factored in to that proposal, but there's a big donut hole in Central Washington. I'm proud of the progress we've made on Confluence Parkway. I did try to offer amendments in the full Senate for all of our Wenatchee Valley projects, but I did coordinate a meeting with the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, Mark Golias, and my Republican ranking member, Senator Curtis King out of Yakima. We had all the House and Senate, the staff members, Republicans and Democrats, that staff the Transportation Committee participate in that. Mayor Kuntz, Jeff Wilkins from the Transportation Council, and Richard DeRock all participated, as well as myself. And that went really well. And so I continue to be encouraged, even though they kind of have all these votes predetermined. One thing I will say about the Move Ahead Washington proposal is that it's different from prior proposals because it doesn't include any gas taxes or anything like that. It does include that one-time transfer from the operating budget, which you referenced, and then it also counts upon certain revenues that will be coming in from the state's Climate Commitment Act, which has already been approved, as well as some one-time dollars from federal infrastructure bill that President Biden signed last November. So it is kind of creative how they're utilizing the revenues for this. And there's no bonding vote. There's no bonding element to this package. So there's no two-thirds vote in both houses that is normally required on transportation packages. And the reason I say that is because the Move Ahead Washington package does not need Republican votes to pass. It's just a simple majority. And so they have the votes to move this along, and that the best thing I can do is me and the stakeholders from our area is make a case for Confluence Parkway on its merit. It's a $134 million project, and it has transit benefits and bike lanes and pedestrian enhancements. But out of the $134 million, we've already received $49 million from the federal government. Congresswoman Kim Schreyer's was really involved in advocating for this federal infra grant. So that leaves us, as you mentioned, Dave, $85 million unfunded. And these federal grant dollars are time limited. So we don't want to leave those federal dollars, the $49 million, on the table. So I've been working really hard. I've had conversations with Representative Steele and Gaynor. I've had conversations and text messages with Congresswoman Kim Schreyer. She's taken an active involvement in this, as well as our local stakeholders. So I still think there's a chance that we can get it in. It's definitely on their radar. So we'll see what goes to the governor in the end. But what does go to the governor, I think, has a good chance potentially of including the Wenatchee Valley's Confluence Parkway project. And the reason I think that would be helpful to them is because they want to tout this whole proposal as a statewide system of investments. But I keep pointing out there's not a lot in Central Washington in these Republican districts. And so if they want to make this package truly statewide, I think this could help them accomplish that. So I'm trying to just stay positive. I'm trying to work on continuing my positive bipartisan relationships in order to secure something of benefit for our district.
We're talking to State Senator Brad Hawkins, 12th District here. Also here in the 12th District, as far as some transportation items. So we've got about $50 million in other projects. So Wenatchee and Landing Interchange, some safety improvements on the corridor between Wenatchee and Monroe. Also something to make it a little safer for folks walking back and forth across Highway 2 in Leavenworth. Boy, some snow showers suddenly coming down outside. I see across outside our studios here all of a sudden. So we got some other projects as well. Where do those stand? If you can give us a quick little update on each of those.
Sure. Yeah, it's not quite spring yet, is it, Dave?
No.
As much as we want it to be. Well, I tried for each of those projects. I think our region's number one priority has long been the Confluence Parkway project. Although this Wenatchee Landing Interchange, the $36 million project that's on the Douglas County side of the river, just outside of the Odabashian Bridge, that's a very important project. You know, I've made the case also this year for Highway 2 safety and traffic flow improvements. The money is really tight in this package, but one thing I did squeeze in was a US 2 pedestrian undercrossing near Leavenworth. It was a project that was already identified in the Chelan-Douglas Transportation Council's corridor study from a couple years ago. And what they like about it is it's purely a pedestrian project, and they had some extra funds in the bike and pedestrian section of this transportation package. So we were able to get that in as it came out of the Senate Transportation Committee. But it's great. You know, that pedestrian undercrossing is planned to go basically from a park and ride in Leavenworth, right there where Cashmere Valley Bank and the U.S. Forest Service buildings are, directly to the downtown. And if we can get hundreds or potentially thousands of pedestrians safely under the undercrossing under Highway 2 into the downtown, it will actually improve traffic flow through Leavenworth along Highway 2. Because as you know, Dave, many of the tourists are along the sidewalks of Highway 2, which when it's dark and cold and it's just, and they're crossing the highway to get to the downtown, it's not safe for them. And drivers must slow down in order to avoid accidents, so it tends to back up traffic. So I think that's a two-for-one project, and I'm very excited that we got it in on the Senate side.
You've got some bills that you have been sponsor or maybe co-sponsor of, I want to run down those as well. One is trying to change the way that I think it's tourism tax dollars can be used. This could work maybe in Leavenworth or even Chelan to pay for workforce housing. So it's changing the way that those kinds of dollars can be used to try and make it so that folks can actually live in the town that they're working in. Tell us about Senate Bill 5868. How's that coming along?
Well, coming along pretty well. It passed the Senate and is now before the House Finance Committee. And we had a hearing this morning, and we had numerous local stakeholders testify for that, including Mayor Carl Flory of Leavenworth, Steve Wilkinson from the Chelan Valley Housing Trust, Sasha Slayman representing Chelan County, Diane Blake of the Cascade Medical Center, and many others. So that has gone really well. You know, it's difficult with housing because the housing prices in Leavenworth have essentially tripled since 2012. It's similar in Chelan, and Wenatchee Valley is struggling as well. And so when it comes to trying to figure out ways to get a steady revenue stream to local governments to address their housing challenges, half the legislature doesn't want to approve new taxes, which I guess I include myself in that boat. But then when you try to find existing revenue streams and try to work in extra permissible uses for housing into those existing taxes that are already flowing in, there's obviously people who have some turf wars related to that. But, you know, I'm thankful that bill is moving along. I stepped away from the tourism component to another tax stream, and that's had a lot of support. So I'm thankful for that. And if we can get it out of the House Finance Committee, then essentially it would go to the House floor for a full vote and get closer to the governor that way.
The school consolidation incentives, this would be a voluntary move that could help out some of our really rural and smaller school districts. How is that coming along, and maybe a little brief explanation as to why this could be advantageous?
Yeah, that's another bill that I'm prime sponsoring. So I kind of have three or four this session that I'm sponsoring along. You know, I have secured a lot of bipartisan co-sponsors, thankfully. But this bill, as you mentioned, is totally voluntary. What I've noticed as I looked at the data is that smaller school districts tend to spend much higher per student than the state average. The state average per year per student is almost $14,000, and that's state and local dollars. And people don't really realize how much we're investing in taxpayer dollars into our school system. And if we were to redesign the school system today, I'm not sure we would, you know, based on what we spend today, design the system with 295 different school districts, some of which are just a few miles apart. And so what happens is these smaller school districts tend to spend much more because of all the higher cost of their front office functions, having a superintendent, having a financial officer, having a human resources department. It's just in central maintenance. I mean, those really add to expenses for a small school district. So my thought is, why don't some of these small districts consider voluntarily, not mandated, but if you want to join forces with your neighboring school district, again, totally up to you, but if you do, we will help you with your facility needs for a 10-year period through extra grants for basically one-time capital project improvements for your school facilities, because many of these small school districts are really challenged to also adequately maintain their facilities. So the way I look at it, Dave, is as legislators, we're in the carrots and sticks business, and I prefer the carrots. So this is purely a school incentive idea. It doesn't force school districts to do anything. It's currently before the House Capital Budget Committee, and I expect to have a hearing this Friday. So I'm hoping that I can keep the bill moving throughout the process. And at this point, all of my bills just have a couple more steps left to go. But in general, there's about 1,000 bills that have been introduced this session, and less than 10% of the bills will become law. I have a batting average of about 400 on my bills. Not that I'm a baseball player, but I do better than 10%, but the reality is it's really difficult for any bills to become law. And fortunately, I have three or four that are still in the mix.
Yeah, your tow truck operators bill, I know that you'd introduced that at least last session, and that's going to help. We've got a number of tow truck operating companies here, including Randy's Towing, I think, which is the firm that brought this to your attention. Yep. Any progress on that? Does it look like it might pass this session?
Well, we passed it out of the Senate again. So last year, the bill passed the Senate. It passed the House Transportation Committee. There were only two House Transportation Committee members that voted against it. But in the end, we just couldn't get it to the House floor in time for a vote. But fortunately, all the bills that are introduced during a biennium or during a two-year cycle, if they don't pass one year, they're still technically alive the second year. So we passed it through Senate Committee, Transportation Committee, and through the Senate again this year, and it's now before the House Transportation Committee. And I'll be seeing those folks again, I think it's later this week, to make the case. And I certainly hope that bill can make it all the way through the process this year. We got so close last year. I'm really hoping we can get it across the finish line.
We're talking to State Senator Brad Hawkins. You voted yes on the Senate Bill 5909, which was legislative oversight of emergency powers. The Senate has approved this. I don't know where this is sitting in the House. So I understand, though, that there is no requirement for affirmative legislative approval to continue an emergency order. So how does this change anything?
Well, it doesn't change it too much, but in my opinion, and the reason I voted yes, is because it's slightly better. So basically right now, this bill would allow the legislature, if it's not in session, which the Washington State Legislature meets annually, but only for a few months out of the year. We're year-round legislators, but we're only in session for part of the year, and that's based on the state constitution. And honestly, I think that's a little messed up because we have so much stuff that just gets squeezed in to this short amount of time. But nevertheless, if the legislature's out of session, and this bill allows the four corners, which is the leadership of Republican and Democrat in the House, and Republican and Democrat in the Senate, if they are unanimous, the four of them, they can revoke a governor's emergency proclamation with those four members of the legislature in agreement. And to me, that's a heavy lift, and I'm not sure that it would, if that was in place today, that we would actually get all four corners to agree to roll back the governor's state of emergency, but it at least provides some sort of check and balance. And when I spoke on the Senate floor, and this bill passed on February 15th by a vote of 29-20, and it was bipartisan, but a lot of my Republican colleagues just said, I don't want to vote for this. I know we want emergency powers reform, but I don't want to vote for this because it doesn't do enough. And my thought was, you're right, it doesn't do enough, but something is better than nothing. And the way I used an analogy, you know, when you're at the optometrist and they put the machine with the different lenses in front of you and they say, is this better or worse, better or worse? And the way I look at it is we have a current statute on the books in law, and this, if it's brought over the top of it as a lens, I think it makes it a little bit better. And so that's why I voted yes. Although I'm not sure if that Senate bill will successfully make its way through the House of Representatives. And Dave, I'm not sure if that Senate bill does make it through the House, whether Governor Inslee would sign it into law or veto it. And so the big question about emergency powers, and a lot of people want to see changes, but we've got to understand Governor Inslee is still our governor. And in order for any bill, especially one that changes our emergency powers, it would need to be approved by both the House and the Senate and be signed by the governor in order to become law. So it's that bill's fate is uncertain.
Well, you've got a meeting that starts in 45 seconds, so we appreciate the time today and some updates on some key projects here for our area and some bills you're working on. How do folks stay in touch with you the rest of this session?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And I'm sorry we couldn't cover everything, but if people want to reach out to me, my website is senatorbradhawkins.org. We have a contact me page, and people can fill out that form and send it to us. It comes to my staff, it comes to me, and we'll work hard to get you follow-up answers to your questions or follow-ups if you have them. So thank you so much for having me on, Dave. It's always great to connect with you and to be a guest on the agenda.
Okay, we'll have you on again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, sounds great.